and I scurried onto the ramp about two-thirds of the way to the cave. I didn't want to lead the thing into our home, but I did need to get a little above the black-feathered creature so I could throw my spear from outside the bushes. He yelped and howled as he crushed branches and kicked rocks during his struggle up the slope. The hill wasn't very steep, but it narrowed toward the cave, and the bushes made it difficult for such a large dinosaur to climb. My hands got sweaty holding my spear as the ugly sloth dinosaur neared. The head itself looked a little like a small T-Rex, or possibly a velociraptor, except the end of his jaw was a funky bird's beak. The back half of his mouth was full of teeth, but the beak part of the mouth had none. His 8-inch claws looked plenty deadly. The safest way to fight him was to stay as far away as possible. Sheila didn't kill him with her weapon, so I doubted mine would do the job. On the other hand, if I could use my tame skill before he got up onto the ramp, maybe he'd leave without any danger to myself or the others. I could use the spear as a last resort. I steeled myself to use my tame skill on him and peered into one of his large black eyes. Tame worked on Jinx by getting close and doing the same thing. I'd missed my opportunity with those trikes, and building the fort left no time for finding new dinosaurs, so I was more than ready to give it another try. For 2 seconds, the Erlikosaurus seemed frozen in place, and I had the perfect opportunity to commune, or convince, or whatever I did, to bend him to my will. During that time, I conveyed the idea I was a friend. "Sit still," I ordered in a firm voice. I prayed my tame skill was working, but the IQ refused to confirm my success. The moment of pause broke, and the dino whipped his tail around and scrambled closer to me. "Halt!" I shouted as I tried to reinforce the verbal command with a mental one. I took a couple of steps back on the ramp to give Tame another second or two, but the only place left to go was inside the cave, and I'd die before I let that happen. The beast rose up higher, and I saw the patch of red blood just under his left wing where he'd somehow broken off Sheila's spear. "Stop, damn you!" I shouted as he tried to swat me with the deadly claws attached to his feathery arms. I had to accept Tame wasn't working, and that I was in danger of royally screwing the pooch if I let him get up onto the ramp. I had a second to think how great it would have been to defuse the bomb on our doorstep with just words, but I was ready with my backup plan. It was time to kill a dinosaur. I lowered my spear and tried to thrust it into the feathery chest looming right in front of me. Despite planting my feet and getting pretty good power, the spear didn't sink in. Instead, it glanced along his feathers and went under one of his arms. The reaction from the bird sloth was to clamp down on the wooden pole, and the pressure almost ripped the spear right out of my hands. Most days, it would be impossible for me to tip over any animal weighing as much as this dinosaur, but he was already on slanted terrain and standing on loose rock. The idea was pure insanity. But with the spear entangled in his claws and arms, it gave me a brief opportunity to push the sloth dino right back over the edge.
"Fuck you!"
I blurted out. I pushed the spear sideways into his stomach as hard as I was able and felt the dino begin to tip away. My heart jumped into my mouth when a claw hooked my sleeve and tried to drag me along, so I let go of my weapon and shook my arm free. I stood on tiptoe right at the edge of the ramp and watched as the tar-colored beast slid back into the bushes he had tried so hard to escape. A second later, I was able to step on firm ground, jam my heart back down in my throat, and consider what to do next. Sheila had been running to catch up to me and almost reached my spot on the ramp as the dino tumbled away. The look of surprise on her face probably matched my own.
"We have the high ground to kill it," I said as I ran to the turnstile. "Galmine, toss out some spears!"
I looked inside to confirm she heard me.
"Here you go, Victor!"
the rock woman cried out. A few seconds later, she tossed spear after spear through the branches of our door as fast as she was able. Sheila and I soon picked up 8 between the two of us, though more were coming out. Galmine was prepping us for a long fight, but I wanted to end this as quickly as possible. Whatever was driving the forest crazy was a bigger threat than this one dinosaur. "We have enough, you ready?" I asked Sheila.
"I am now,"
she replied. Together we started down the ramp to see where the sloth creature tumbled. I quickly established that he hadn't gone very far and was struggling on his side next to and below the ramp. He looked up the hill instead of down, which was kind of funny because he could have easily escaped simply by going into the grove. It reaffirmed my decision to kill the beast, and we had the perfect position from which to throw our spears. Sheila yelled and threw hers right into the exposed chest of the Erlikosaurus. It sank deep into the feathers, just like her other attack. Using her example, I aimed one of my spears and threw with as much power as I could summon. Mine flew true for 10 feet and sank into the prone body.
Fuck yeah!
I shouted as I felt the euphoria of combat course through my muscles. Sheila threw a second spear, and it pierced the dino's feathers very close to her previous hit. My second throw was a bit off and stabbed the flailing tail instead of the main part of his body. I was miffed at missing his core, but our other shot seemed to be having an effect on the beast. He was noticeably less aggressive, and I watched for a few seconds as he seemed to give up trying to get to his feet. I threw my last two spears, but they both missed. It was clear the dinosaur was a goner, and my testosterone-fueled battle focus was subsiding like air from a tire.
"Hey, Sheila, let's get more spears,"
I said while glancing at the empty space where she'd previously been standing. When I looked up the ramp, I saw her already coming back down with 8 more of our weapons.
"You read my mind," I said when she arrived.
"We have to kill him and then get back inside."
"Aim for his wounds," she advised.
I tried to maintain my battle intensity as I aimed and struck the beast a few more times. It felt like shooting fish in a barrel, but there was no room for sympathy anymore. I couldn't think of dinosaurs like lost dogs back in Los Angeles. These ancient reptiles were built to kill and eat meat, and we were the meat. I'd already been too close to those 8-inch claws while I tried to tame him, and I didn't ever want to do that again. If I had the option to stand on the high ground and pelt him with flying spears, I was going to take it. I needed to protect myself and the women who put their lives in my hands. I grunted on my next throw, just like Sheila always did. It was probably imaginary, but I felt that it gave a little extra oomph as my spear sailed true. In a few short seconds, we'd each thrown 2 more spears right into the gut of the black-feathered dino bird. There was no way he was ever getting up.
"I think we've killed him,"
I said breathlessly after all our exertion.
"Victor, you have done well."
"Thanks, Sheila,"
I smiled at the beautiful blonde woman.
"Let's go check on Galmine and Trell. I want to make sure they're okay."
"That is a good plan,"
Sheila agreed, and we moved back up the ramp to our cave entrance. I was sure something was driving in those birds, but the forest appeared calm now, and we made it back up the ramp without any surprises.
"Let's get these spears back inside, okay?"
I said with a smile as I looked one last time at the dead dino that was lying in our front yard.
"Yes, I'll get the others later,"
Sheila agreed with a satisfying hint of heavy breathing as we collected the last few spears Galmine had tossed out. I was still unable to catch my breath after the scrambling and running, and I was glad I wasn't the only one left breathless by our fight. Galmine was waiting for us at the open door.
"Oh, Victor, I'm so glad you and Sheila are okay. You were so brave pushing it over the edge like that,"
the rock-skinned woman said as she motioned us to come inside.
"Nah,
it was nothing. You helped kill it when he got us those spears," I said with a smile. "I may have pushed it away from the cave, but it took the whole team to kill it."
"Aw,"
Galmine said as she brought her hands up to her chest. The adoration in her eyes was apparent, and I forced myself to look away before I checked her out again. Sheila and I pulled at the barrier to secure the cave. My lungs continued to demand more air, but I was pleased my breathing was coming back to normal much faster than it did 2 weeks ago. By the time we had the turnstile in place, my breathing was just about back to baseline.
"What's going on out there?"
Galmine said once the gate was closed.
"I don't know," I admitted. "All those bird dinos ran by, but now it seems to have quieted down again. I'm not sure what that means."
"We were worried sick about you,"
the silver-haired woman added.
"Not we, just her. I had no doubt Sheila would return,"
Trell said in a tempered voice.
"Though I suppose what you did to protect us was mildly useful."
"I'm glad to see you too," I said with legitimate happiness. The spider-woman stood on her human legs at the far side of the fire, but I couldn't overlook the fact that she also held a spear in her hand for the first time since I'd known her.
"And thanks for watching out for Galmine, Trell,"
I motioned to the spear.
"By calling us home, you might have saved her life."
I'd figured out the best way to interact with Trell was to douse her in compliments.
"What? Oh, this?"
Trell seemed to notice her spear as if someone had sneaked it into her hand.
"I needed this to tend the fire. I am very hot inside this cave today and wanted to adjust the coals from a distance."
I didn't point out she was currently standing right next to the hot fire, or that there were no burns on the end of her spear. She and I both knew what she'd done. After Trell said her piece, I noticed Galmine was still watching me with admiration. She wore the biggest smile I'd ever seen on her, which was saying a lot. Her large green eyes had a curious sparkle, and the way she looked at me bordered on feral. Her simulated bathing suit was now just a faint outline, and I got the feeling she was undressing me with those emerald beauties.
"Victor, I have something for you,"
Galmine said as she stepped closer to me. Her perfume enveloped me as she put her arms around my neck. As soon as her hands were on the back of my neck, she pulled me down to her face.
"Do tell,"
I replied, while desperate to sound nonchalant. I knew what she had in mind because we joked about it every night. After that first encounter standing guard at the cave entrance, she made it clear what she wanted from me. However, each night after that, we had to push it back in the face of exhaustion, stress, and the business of staying alive. Galmine seemed to thrive on our sexual tension, and though she often teased me during those night shifts, she never took it any further.
"You saved my life," Galmine said. "You always make me feel safe. You watch over me even though I'm not yours to take care of."
"That's not why," I tried to reply.
"This is the one time when I'm going to tell you what to do, Victor,"
she said with a playful grin.
"You are a giver,"
the stone woman continued. "I've watched you give and give since you got here. The water, the food, the fort. You've helped Sheila and me stay alive without asking anything in return. You even refused my advances in those first days, do you remember?" Her lips pursed together as she flashed me a fake pout. "I do," I admitted. I'd steered away from all talk of sex so I didn't distract myself from the more important task of staying alive. However, each time I did that, I paid the price by walking around with a tent in my pants. The flirtatious Galmine loved to call me out on it. I figured it was the cost of doing business with three beautiful women, and it was all worth it since it kept them alive.
"Well, I've been thinking about this for a while because it is not the way of my people to give themselves to only one person,"
Galmine said while getting even closer to my lips.
"But after what I just saw you do, I'm done thinking about it. I'm yours, Victor. I'm yours in every way a woman and a man of your world can be together. It's your reward for all your hard work to keep me alive. Now, I want you to let me take care of you in return."
She looked up at me as if desperate for me to say yes. I had a confusing burst of emotions, but there was no denying I'd wanted to accept her proposition since that first night at my guard post. I leaned in the last few inches, and she met my kiss with a skilled tongue. Her body moved closer to mine, and she pressed her breasts up against my chest while she continued her eager kiss. A moment later, my dick rode up against her stomach, and she moaned when she felt it press against her skin. She roughly pushed me away, but didn't release me.
"I want you right now, Victor,"
she whispered while pointing next to the fire.
"Right here."
There was no denying I wanted her, too. God, I'd wanted to fuck each of these three women since the moment I'd arrived. Before that, I'd wanted to fuck Lacey and every girl at her pool party. Sheila said I tamed myself here, but my restraint was at the breaking point. "We can't, Galmine. God knows I want to, but the dinosaurs outside?"
"There will always be dinosaurs outside," she interrupted me.
"They can wait an hour or two." She flashed me a playful wink. "Trell and Sheila are standing right here," I said as I gestured to the other two women. It felt all sorts of weird to have the others in the cave while Galmine talked about becoming my lover.
"They can watch,"
Galmine started to say.
"Disgusting!" Trell cried out. "I don't want to see that! You will not engage in such animal behavior in this cave!"
"Perhaps you can use the alcove,"
Sheila suggested as she pointed to Trell's room. "I can wait outside."
"May we have privacy behind your curtain, dear Trell?"
Galmine said in a courteous but urgent voice.
"And sully my living space? Absolutely not, I forbid it!"
Trell forcefully stated with her own brand of tenacity. I chuckled at the whole thing. I would love nothing more than to sully her quarters after how she treated me all this time. But even my rock-hard boner wouldn't allow me to be a dick to her. I searched the cave for an alternative, even though I knew privacy was impossible. Sheila was near the barrier, and it looked like she was preparing to leave, but seeing the feline warrior made me rethink that dumb idea with my leader's brain. I really needed to focus on the task at hand. I did want to have sex with Galmine, but it was going to have to wait until I was done with our new fort, or we had some privacy. Galmine turned my head, so I faced her again.
"Just take me, Victor,"
she said in a sultry beg of a voice.
"We are all adults here. I need to be yours. I want to be yours. I don't care if our friends watch. They can even participate if they want to."
No. And you?"
Trell said, but I noticed that the spider woman hadn't stepped away from us. I had to fight the primal urge. As a leader, with strange shit going down outside our cave, I knew having sex right now was just fucking wrong. As a 21-year-old male with almost 2 weeks of time served in the company of smoking hot babes, I was... My indecision was interrupted as the IQ flashed an update. I smiled at Galmine and pulled her face against my neck so I could take a moment to read it. The assets tab flashed on the main screen. When I clicked in, I saw some new information. Structures, 0. Creatures, 1. Women, 1. The 1 after women was flashing, so I touched it and navigated to the next screen. It was a simple text message which said, "Woman added, Galmine." I smiled at the implications of it, and gently pushed the silver-haired woman off my chest so I could look in her eyes again. I was going to mention the computer, but when I saw those hungry green orbs and wet lips, I lost the ability to speak, and instead pulled her in for another kiss. I fell into the moment, and savored Galmine's sweet-tasting mouth, to the point I lost track of how long we were standing there.
"Victor,"
Sheila finally called to get my attention. I opened my eyes and stopped kissing the warm granite woman. Galmine smiled but didn't try to stop me, and I admired her for an extra second because she was so beautiful. I noticed Jinx running in circles back by his woodpile, and I got the sense he was also attempting to get my attention.
"Victor, there's something out there,"
Sheila added before I could reply to her first attempt. "Hang on," I said while scraping myself from Galmine and walking the few steps to the front entrance.
"What do you see?"
"Not see. Hear,"
Sheila relayed, while appearing to strain as she listened.
"There is something big coming this way."
I didn't hear or see anything outside until one of the white birds ran through the grove on the far side of the fort. "Is that what you heard?" I pointed at the distant bird.
"No,"
Sheila said, a little dramatically.
"It is still approaching." "I feel it,"
Trell remarked in a quiet voice.
"She's right. Something's coming. The ground is vibrating."
I couldn't hear or feel anything unusual, so I was unsure how to plan for it. I didn't feel very much like a leader, especially because the two women could sense the danger, but I could not. While I was enjoying Galmine's affection, I wasn't thinking about dinosaurs, guarding the cave, or building our fort, and as a result, I'd put everyone in danger. Who was I kidding by thinking I could run off with her like a horny teenager? I started to say, but I did hear a new sound, and I strained my ears. It was a distant rumble, like a freight train passing through the other side of town. And it was undoubtedly getting louder.
"Look, more animals are fleeing,"
Sheila said as she pointed to the grove. Packs of the white birds ran the same way as all those before them. Smaller, multicolored flying birds also flew from tree to tree as if they were searching for one where they'd be safe. A line of 5 or 6 more of those golden dinosaurs ran right by the fort, moving to our right like all the rest. I tried to get an ID on those goldens, but the IQ didn't return any data.
"This isn't over,"
I said with growing dread. The rumble got louder with each second, and everyone but Trell stood at the barrier to watch outside. As we peered between the gaps in the branches, Galmine grabbed my arm and slung it over her shoulder so she could lean against me. I pulled her tight against me as the noise continued to build.
"It sounds like an avalanche,"
I said in an increasingly loud voice, Though the idea was insane, the nearest mountain I knew about was the volcano, and that was miles from our cave.
"What a spaceship!"
Trell said as she joined us at the door.
"It could be my sister's!"
she yelled above the din. I looked over at Trell and smiled because I hoped she was right. A giant fucking rescue ship with thrusters and shit blowing down trees and catching things on fire would perfectly explain why the birds and small dinos were fleeing. All four of us stood at the exit while waiting for confirmation of some sort. I'd gotten a little excited at the prospect of rescue, even though I'd given up on the idea a long time ago. Trell's joyous face, combined with that unusual disturbance, gave me hope it was possible to leave this hellish world.
"There!"
Sheila shouted as she pointed down into the grove. I saw it too, but gave a sideways glance at Trell to watch as her demeanor flip-flopped from happy to sad.
"A stampede!"
Sheila added. A horde of gray-skinned dinosaurs moved together inside a tumbling cloud of dust and debris. Several huge trikes ran at the front of the pack, as if using their horns and wide crests as snowplows. The dinos further back were harder to pick out from inside the fast-moving dust cloud. I caught sight of some of those funny-shaped tubular crests. There were also a few brontosaurus-looking long necks, and dozens of ostrich-like dinos trotted along the fringes. The roar from clomping feet was deafening, and it shook the ground so much that it felt like we were standing among them. Galmine pushed up against me as we both experienced the rattle of rock under our feet. One of the white-feathered dinos fell from above the cave, crashed onto our doorstep, and then bounded down the ramp toward the passing stampede. A moment before it reached the other runners, a massive, red-scaled predator lunged from the dust cloud and snatched it mid-jump. The white bird fought for a few frantic seconds, but it still ended up crushed by the powerful jaws of the much larger dinosaur. I leaned on the turnstile and tried to get the clearest line of sight to the new reptilian monster. This time, the IQ gave me an answer right away. Identification: dinosaur, Carnotaurus sastri, male. As I celebrated capturing intel from such a long distance, the new dino dropped the bird and seemed to look our way. It was as if a bull mated with a crocodile and then took on the general shape of a two-story building with teeth. The rigid scales and bumps on his back were very much like a crocodile. His tiny forearms were a lot like a Rex, but they were so much smaller I almost missed them. Finally, his burnt red scales and two stubby, devilish horns reminded me of a bullfighter's worst nightmare. It was fucking huge, angry, and its eyes looked hungry. Could it see us through the branches and leaves of the barrier? Should I clear everyone from the door, or would that movement get his attention? I stayed frozen while the Carnotaurus made up its mind. As the stampede shuffled along, the trailing plume of dust got larger and closer to the cave opening. The horned dinosaur took a few steps our way, just as the arriving tide of debris really started to blow in. I still didn't allow myself to move, though I almost pissed myself when I saw several other Carnotaurus appear in the grove. Most continued to chase the main stampede, giving us the answer to what caused it. But at least one more joined the curious male hanging out below our cave. The dust blew through the door before I could see where they went. "Holy shit, this is crazy," I said, even though no one could hear me. Sheila remained near the tree barrier as sheets of dust blew in her face. Our gate remained closed, but she held her spear as if one of the devil dinos was about to break through. I watched her for a moment, and then launched into a fit of coughing as the dust kept coming. I guided Galmine away from the door and sat her down at the fire. It was still too noisy to talk, so I smiled to keep her calm. I then got a spear off our weapons rack and stood next to Sheila. The roar of the stampede finally began to lessen as it moved away. The dust remained thick, though, so there was no way to know what was still outside. At least two of those predators were down there, but I had some hope they got caught up in the dust and moved on. I stifled my coughing as a Carnotaurus howled from very close by. The roar was loud enough to make our cave shake. Adrenaline spilled out into my body as Sheila and I both took a step backward. The acoustics of the cave made sound difficult to pin down, and the dust made it even worse, but the dino seemed no farther than the bottom of the ramp. I glanced at the frightened Galmine and wanted to walk back over and console her, but I saw Trell standing beside the fire with her spear ready, and I turned back to protect the door. The carnivore roared again, and it practically stole air from my lungs. Another howl responded to it from not far away. I held up two fingers to Sheila, and she responded with a nod, and then we both took a few more steps back, so we were next to Trell and Galmine at the fire. The flimsy barrier was great against birds and flappy pterodactyls, but the big, meat-seeking Carnotaurus could probably pick it apart with ease. The more relevant question was whether the big hunters could fit through our door. We listened for a couple of minutes as the second predator got closer to its friend. I didn't think I could summon any additional fear inside me, but when they came together, they howled and barked back and forth like they were talking. I imagined them discussing the best way to storm our cave and pluck us out. One of them ended their food discussion by bellowing for 5 seconds like it had won the coin toss.
"Oh, fuck,"
I whispered while pushing my warrior friend behind me. "Sheila, back up. They're coming." If giant carnivores punched through that door, they were going to meet me first. I clenched my spear in a death grip and pointed it forward. My racing heart stole all the blood from my brain and directed it to my muscles as part of my fight response. I got tunnel vision as I focused completely on the swirl of dust just outside the turnstile. But the dinos didn't plow through right away, and it took several minutes of tense anticipation before I accepted they weren't coming at all. The predators continued to growl and shriek, but I heard the distinct snap of giant teeth, too. That went on for a couple of minutes before everything got silent out there. In the lull, I managed to step a few paces toward the barrier before one of the dinos belted out another of its huge roars. It was no less scary, but I could tell by the echo the dinosaur was no longer right outside our cave. The sounds of the stampede were much reduced as well. It was once again a distant freight train and heading in the appropriate direction, away from us. The stampede smoke trail was settling, but it still hadn't entirely dissipated. It seemed prudent to wait until the air was clear before doing anything outside the cave, even if it trashed our workflow for the rest of the day.
"They are leaving,"
Sheila said as she stepped next to me again. I pulled off my hat and ran my fingers through my wet hair to calm my nerves. My heart rate would probably remain on high alert until the day I left this planet, either by spaceship or in a body bag. It didn't come down at all as I watched the dust outside.
"I thought for sure they saw us. Do you think they'll come back?"
I quietly asked our resident hunter.
"I do not know. Maybe their vision is not that good, or they were looking at something else,"
Sheila said thoughtfully. There was nothing else out there except the dino sloth's body.
"I bet they saw the dino we already killed and thought it was easy pickings," I said, as if processing Sheila's suggestion. "It was a hunting party,"
Sheila said with clinical detachment.
"The carnivores banded together to cause the stampede and take down whatever they could. If the dust had arrived a minute sooner, they might have missed our kill and kept after the main herd. It was bad luck."
"They have better luck than Victor, that's for sure,"
Trell suggested with sarcasm. I didn't have any appropriate comebacks inside me. I was coming off my adrenaline rush, and I steadied my shaking body by leaning against the wall. I kept it low-key by pretending to need to catch my breath, since Trell was the last person I wanted to see me having any weakness.
"Thank you for what you did,"
Sheila began in a low voice.
"But we can fight better side by side."
She was no doubt talking about how I whipped out the chivalry and stepped in front of her when we were waiting for the carnos to rip through our makeshift gate. "I'm not sure why I did that," I said. "I know you fight better than me, but I wanted to take the edge off whatever was going to attack us so you could keep them safe." I motioned back to Trell and Galmine. "But I'll resist it next time so we can fight together."
"We are alive,"
the blonde warrior continued.
"You fought skillfully against the black-feathered dinosaur. I can see why Galmine feels as she does."
Her strong eyes were unusually soft. "Thank you.
Seriously.
You got me out of that tree and beat me back to the cave to help fight off the intruder. The victory belongs to us both." My body was starting to level out from all the excitement, and I felt exhausted. Sheila and I stared outside until the dust settled. We could hear the two Carnotaurus moving away with their incessant howling, like a pair of self-obsessed teens. A little later, the air quality improved enough that we could see the nearest trees in the redwood grove, including the ground around them.
"You've got to be fucking kidding me,"
I spat out as my heart tumbled into my stomach.
No,
Sheila added with a long groan.
"This took us 10 days.
The fort was toast. I imagined it had been picked up by a tornado, slammed against the redwood, and then dropped 50 feet away. The tidy square fort should have been on the left side of our sequoia, but it was now a long pile of logs on the right, as if someone wiped an ugly blotch of paint across the forest clearing. A 50-yard swath of destruction ran left and right through the grove, and it ripped up or beat down anything green on the ground and knocked over many of the smallest trees. The fort was just a small part of all the damage. Galmine and Trell both joined us at the gate to look at the devastation. The rock woman gasped when she saw the wreck, but Trell surprised me again by keeping her mouth shut. Instead, she quietly walked away. I felt the weight of 10 full days of labor flushing right down the crapper. We could rebuild it in probably half the time because all the logs were cut and shaped, but damn, it was going to be a bitch to do it all again. And then, what if another stampede came through? I know this looks bad, I began in a calm voice. But if my mom were here, she would remind me to focus on the fact no one got hurt. If Sheila and I had been down there when the place went nuts, we might have been trampled or eaten. So that's a good thing. We weren't injured fighting the black-feathered dinosaur, and we got lucky about 6 different times. So that's awesome. And those big predators didn't try to sneak through our door, which I'm calling an epic win. I hope my words didn't sound hollow. I'd often heard the term fake it till you make it, and now I felt like I was living those words. This was really bad, and I had to blink a few times to keep the tears out of my eyes.
I'll help in any way I can,
Galmine said with teary eyes and a brave smile.
I was just so looking forward to being out there in our new home.
Hey, we'll be out there in no time, I promise, I replied with a voice as upbeat as I could make it. I've had a lot of time to plan while building our fort. I thought about all the commands I've given to Jinx, and I think now is the time to tame a real dinosaur to help us. Something big, like a Triceratops or one of those crest-topped guys. That way we can drag more logs, dig bigger holes, and make the fort stronger than the last one. This is a setback, but it just means we have to go big to get it done in time. I felt a bit more confident as the words came from my mouth. A big dinosaur could really help us build a new fort. All I had to do was tame one.
This is but one more challenge from this world, Sheila said.
She sounded down, but far from beaten.
Yeah? See? We lost some stuff, but big deal. As long as we're alive, things aren't as bad as they could be.
I didn't mention that we had less than 20 days before the orange birds were coming to kick us out.
We'll go get a big dinosaur and use it to help us do big stuff. We'll rebuild the camp better the second time. I think a trike would work.
Why bother?
Trell called from her curtained area. The partition was open, and I turned to see the spider woman's back was turned to us.
We have to do something to try and survive,
I said as I walked toward Trell's private alcove. I stopped a foot or so from her curtain, and then I took a deep breath before stepping into her room. She didn't answer, and I moved to stand right behind her.
Trell?
I whispered as I braced myself for her to turn around and pepper me with insults.
What?
She whispered back. I didn't see her face, but she was hugging herself.
We're gonna be okay, I said. I'll go get a big dinosaur, and we'll move bigger logs. It's gonna be all right.
No. No, it won't,
she whispered, and I could see her shoulders shaking a bit. Can you turn around? I asked.
No, she hissed. Go away. Go find your dinosaur. It isn't going to help. We are going to die here. My sisters aren't coming for me. You were right. We are stuck here forever. Our only hope was that camp, and now it is ruined.
Hey. I reached my hand out cautiously and laid it on her shoulder. I expected her to jump or spin around and scream at me, but she didn't move when I touched her. Can you turn around so we can talk?
We are talking right now,
Trell sighed, but then she surprised me by actually turning around. I had to step back a bit so that her spider legs didn't smack into me, and I took my hand off her shoulder. Trell looked like she was doing everything she could to keep from bawling. Her face was frozen in a painful frown, and she was blinking her black eyes 12 times every second, In that instant, I knew everything I needed to know about the beautiful woman. I knew she had raised a wall to keep us all out, and I knew it was now crumbling down around her. I reached out to touch her shoulder again, and then I pulled Trell against my chest. I felt her body stiffen, and she inhaled a sharp breath of surprise.
"What are you doing?"
she asked. When my parents died, there was no one to hug me. It was all I wanted. My arms wrapped around her shoulders tighter, and my left hand came up to stroke her hair. She was shorter than me, and her face was pressed into my collarbone. I halfway expected her to scream, or to call me a stupid male, or to push away from me, or to do something else that would make me regret showing her any affection. But instead, Trell just stood against me for a few moments. Then she began to cry. It was a low whine at first, but then she pushed her face into my chest, and I felt her body spasm with each painful sob.
"They aren't coming,"
she gasped between her cries, while her claw-like fingers gently kneaded the outside of my shoulders. I didn't say anything. I simply held her.
"I'm never going to get home. I'm stuck here forever. Why? Why me? I didn't want this. I didn't agree. I don't want to die. I'm not supposed to be here."
Her spider legs drummed against the floor behind her as if they were throwing a temper tantrum. I continued to stroke her hair gently.
"We worked so hard on that wall, and then it's gone. We wasted so much time. How are we going to build another one? You are right, those orange birds are coming. We are going to die. We'll build another wall, but they will just tear it down again. I don't want to die."
Trell actually hugged me tighter and rubbed her face against my chest. Then she started sobbing again. I wrapped my arms tighter around her slender shoulders and then pressed my cheek against the side of her head. I felt another set of arms circle us on the right, and I turned my head a bit to see Galmine. The gray-skinned woman smiled at me, and then she pressed herself against Trell and me. Then Sheila was on my left, and her hair wrapped around my neck as she embraced us. I didn't know how long the four of us stood there holding each other, but Trell's sobs eventually stopped. She still didn't pull her face away from my chest, though, and her hand still grabbed me as if I was a life raft and she was in danger of drowning. A few more minutes passed, and I knew that it would be okay to let her go. I needed to let her go. There was too much shit to do if we wanted to live. I pulled my face away from Trell and turned to Galmine. Her emerald eyes were closed, but she seemed to sense I was looking at her, and she opened them before she gave me a loving smile. I turned to Sheila and saw that she was already watching me. Her yellow-gold eyes glowed a bit in the firelight, and I took a long breath. "I'm gonna do everything I can to protect the three of you," I whispered. "If we work together, we'll get through this."
"I believe in you, Victor," Galmine whispered. "I do as well,"
Sheila agreed. Trell didn't say anything, but her hands loosened from my shoulders a bit, and she let out a long sigh. "Let's go find a dinosaur to help us build a better wall," I said to Sheila, and the beautiful Catwoman gave me a short nod.
Chapter 12. After Sheila and I had exited the cave and replaced our makeshift tree barrier, we grabbed our spears and walked down the ramp. I stopped her as soon as we were out of earshot from our two other companions, and then gestured to the ruins of the camp. "A tamed dinosaur can help us fix this in a snap," I said as we both looked at the mess.
"I agree. But do you think we're going out too soon?"
Sheila asked. It had been an hour since the stampede, and it was 1 hour more than I wanted to spend waiting. I'd promised to tame a dinosaur, and I was anxious to deliver. "We'll never know for sure. All I know is that most of the carnivores ran up there," I pointed toward the valley to our right. "So we are going the other way," I pointed to the left, toward the lake.
"Yes, the predators are likely distracted by the easy prey running with the stampede. We may never have a better opportunity to explore the lake unmolested,"
Sheila replied. "Yeah, I like the way you think," I said, while remembering all sorts of video games back home. "Hit their home base while they're distracted." I motioned for her to keep going down the ramp. There should have been a horse-sized dinosaur lying on the rocks next to our walking path, but the body had been taken. "You were right, Sheila,"
Those dinosaurs were drawn to this guy. I'm guessing they carried his body back to their lair. I pointed left to the splotches of blood and blowing feathers in a trail leading away from us. Probably back toward the lake.
Maybe. These carnotaurus dinosaurs, as you call them, are quite different from what chased us from the lake,
Sheila said while she hopped from rock to rock. So you don't think they live there? I asked.
I do not know. Perhaps there are other lakes inside the jungle, or multiple predators share the same lake. However, wherever you find herds of herbivores, that is where you will also find predators.
She wasn't telling me anything I didn't already know about animal behavior, but it did make me wonder how many other carnivores were in that jungle.
Why did they take the body?
Hungry kids, maybe? I tried to insert some humor in my voice to cancel out the fear gathering in my stomach.
It was small enough to drag away,
she answered with a shrug. I searched what little I could remember of how reptiles cared for their young. I was pretty sure most of them laid eggs and then abandoned them, but some species could take care of their young the way birds did.
Maybe they took it back to feed their brood, I said. It would explain why the two were tag-teaming it.
Sheila also saw the two predators working together, so maybe that was common for mated dinosaur pairs.
If we follow the blood trail, we would shortly know the answer,
my feline friend replied with a smile. I knew she wasn't serious by the way she said it. Following a blood trail through a dinosaur-infested forest was probably the shortest path to a grisly death. While we stood there, orange birds squawked in the trees high above.
Fuck, I said while I glared up at the intrusive birds. A stampede isn't bad enough. I almost forgot about these assholes.
I know you want to go, but perhaps a slight delay is still in order while we ensure they are not coming down,
Sheila said. Her bravery was beyond all doubt, so I read her statement as wanting to ensure our friends in the cave weren't in danger. If we don't leave now, we may never get another chance, I insisted. Our base is well defended from the inside. No matter how much Trell pretends she won't help, she's protective of Galmine. And you saw her with that spear?
Your logic is sound, Victor,
she said in a supportive way. 10 minutes later, Sheila and I were trotting on the far side of the trail of destruction caused by the stampede. We intended to use it as breadcrumbs to take us back to its source, which we assumed was our lake.
It was wise to avoid taming a predator dinosaur,
Sheila said on one of our first halts to listen for bad guys. I tried to tame that black-feathered dinosaur, and it didn't work, so I'd be pretty stupid to try an even bigger and more aggressive dinosaur next. I continued speaking in a quiet voice while we watched the forest. I was able to control Jinx, so he killed the orange bird.
I think if I practice enough, I'll be able to get him to do all kinds of stuff for me.
But if I'm going for something bigger, it's going to be a dino that isn't going to eat me on sight. We walked a little while longer until we stopped at a smallish redwood tree next to the stream. We were in the transition zone between our redwood grove and the jungle, so there was a mix of trees around us. The swath of destruction caused by the stampede had brought us near the lake, but now the trample path broke into smaller trails and became harder to follow. We chose to cross the stream so we could go to the far side of the lake, where the beach-going herbivores like to hang out.
Looks like we're gonna get wet, I suggested with a smirk.
Of the two of us, she was the one already wearing a bathing suit. I automatically checked for my wallet in my right front pocket, but didn't think it mattered if my $6, expired school ID, and Levels and Lords video game rewards card got wet. The stream was deeper here than where we got our water, but it wasn't flowing very fast. I did a quick scan in each direction to see if we'd be lucky enough to have a log to cross, but the stream was clear.
At least we'll get cool, as you like to say.
Sheila replied, again messing up my turn of phrase.
Yeah, we'll be cool while we're staying cool, I admitted.
Sheila tilted her head as if trying to understand.
Your people have several meanings for some words, do you not? We have very few words like that,
she spoke to me while we huddled in some ferns to check for threats.
Some have dozens of meanings. You should hear people use the word fuck over and over in the same sentence.
I laughed while wondering how the alien's IQ could ever translate all the subtle differences of that four-letter Pandora's box.
You have said the word several times, and it always seems to mean something has gone wrong.
Is that what it is used for? She didn't appear to be joking, but it was extra tough to tell because we were also busy searching for predators. Mainly, it means have sex, but you can use it for pretty much anything. For instance, I could say we're at this fucking stream keeping a fucking lookout for some fucking fuckers who want to fuck us up. I chuckled at my fake sentence because it sounded exactly like something a couple of my friends would say. It was total nonsense, but I wondered how the translator would handle it. Did you understand what I just said? I asked.
We are waiting by this stream, looking for evil dinosaurs, she replied by way of interpretation.
Yes, somehow you knew what I meant, I said, but I instantly wondered how it worked. Was it dependent on context? Would she have figured out the same sentence if we were back in the cave instead of by the water? I was naturally inclined to seek the limits of the translation. Given enough time, I was sure I could make a complex sentence using almost nothing but F-bombs.
Now we should go,
Sheila said. She wasn't nearly as interested in converting cuss words to regular speech as I was. I led her into the waist-deep stream while I held my spear and axe above my head. The pull of the current wanted to suck me downstream, and it gave me some legitimate oh-fuck moments when I almost slipped. As I crossed the deepest part, I ignored the dark shadows swimming around my feet. I had no choice but to fight the current and stride across, and I held my breath the whole way. Fortunately, the stream wasn't much wider than a two-lane street, so we were back on dry land in a matter of seconds.
"Did you see all those piranhas?"
I asked in the steadiest voice I could manage. Sheila looked into the water, then back to me. I was captivated by her inquisitive eyes in the sunshine, at least until she replied.
"Victor, those were rocks,"
she deadpanned.
"Are you sure?"
I said with surprise. I knew Sheila would never lie about something so dangerous, but I was convinced they were living animals. She just shook her head, smiled a bit, and then got down and began to drink from the stream.
"Yeah, okay. But cats have worse vision than humans," I said with a playful laugh.
I knew she wasn't a cat, no matter what she looked like, but I was joking with her to bring my stress level out of the red zone.
"What is a cat?"
She replied, "I'll tell you another time. We have to keep moving." I got down and raced through some quick gulps of water, then hopped back up to get us moving again. Sheila followed me across a muddy bank, and we hid in some more ferns and bushes to check again for predators. The smaller stampede path continued along the stream on the way to the lake, so that's where I was looking.
"The beach is not far down the stream,"
she said quietly in a back-to-business voice, and I tried to not notice her wet bikini bottom or the water dripping from her toned legs.
"Okay, I think we know some of the stampede came from the lake, and I don't want to walk us right out in the open," I said while thinking of the plan on the fly. "Instead, let's go farther into the woods, turn left at the jungle, and then pop out behind whatever dinosaurs are now gathered at the lake. That'll give us a chance to see what's happening without exposing ourselves to danger."
"Spoken like a true hunter."
"I'm learning from the best," I replied with pride. We walked for about 10 feet when we heard the call of a Carnotaurus from far away.
"Oh, shit,"
I exhaled in a whisper. My blood pressure was on a roller coaster. We froze at the sound and tried to figure out its location, but even after waiting a couple of minutes, we didn't hear it again.
"We have to go on," I insisted.
Galmine was right about one thing when she said there would always be dinosaur threats outside. We simply had to make the best of it and hope we could avoid the worst of them.
"I think it came from a long way behind us."
Sheila craned her neck like she was straining to listen to the jungle.
"I don't doubt you for a second, Sheila, but the real question is, which way is it heading?"
I looked at the wide variety of trees in the transition zone between the redwood forest and the dense jungle. Most of the trees we'd be able to climb if we needed, but then again, Kelg found out that wasn't always a place of safety.
"I will listen for it to call out again," she said in reply. "Let's keep moving."
I started walking again, but kept my eye out for suitable trees to scale. 10 minutes later, we were on a little rise looking out at the watering hole. From the new vantage point, the lake looked a little like a hand with three fingers. Our fishing cove was the narrow third finger, and the thicker first digit was where I encountered the giant croc. The larger palm of the hand was the main body of water just in front of us. Our overlook was at the edge of a broad, treeless floodplain, surrounded by the tall trees of the jungle. It was kind of like the wrist attached to the hand. The opening was about 200 yards wide and went about that far up into the jungle. It was big enough to give us a great view of this side of the lake. A handful of dinosaurs lounged on the nearby sandy shore, confirming that at least some of the herbivores were already back at the watering hole. However, I could only see dinosaurs with the long tubular crests on their heads. There were none of the triceratopses I'd been hoping for. Damn it. I wanted those trikes to be here. After I said it, I realized it didn't really matter. One dinosaur was as good as the next, as long as it didn't want to eat me. However, ever since I missed taming one in our grove, I pictured a trike as my preferred target.
Shall we come back later?
Sheila offered. No, but I am taking suggestions on which one of those seems most likely to be tamed, I said with a chuckle to steady my beating heart. I wanted a trike, but it was definitely not the time to be a dinosaur snob. However, the thought of going up to one of those tube-head dinosaurs jacked up my beats per minute. Friendly or not, the beasts were a little larger than elephants, and they could crush me without noticing I was under them. Other than their size, these dinos defied comparison to modern animals. Their most prominent features were their gently curving head crests. It looked like they had a 6-foot loaf of French bread balanced on their head, with most of it poking out behind them. They honked playfully with each other, suggesting the crests were part of their speech system. I got a good look at their relatively short necks, stubby tails, and gray barrel-like bodies. They sometimes walked on all fours, but mostly used their two larger hind legs to get around. The more I watched, the more I felt they would be perfect for our needs.
We should avoid taming the very largest, since it is probably the alpha,
Sheila said while studying the herd.
If we can identify him, we should also avoid the females closest to him.
Is that because they'll be the hardest to tame? I asked.
No. If you tame the alpha, the females may follow. If you tame a captive female, the alpha may pursue and try to free her. Of course, I could be completely off.
Sheila didn't sound like her usual reassured self. Are you okay? I asked her as I reached over and touched her arm. She looked at me for a moment before she continued.
I'm fine. I reminded myself of home, I suppose. But do not let it distract you. The one you want will be away from those few I've just mentioned.
She pulled out the rope and busied herself with tying it in knots to get it ready to lasso the head of our dinosaur. We discussed a general plan of taming our mark, then walking it back to the camp using the rope. I got comfortable as I observed the wild gray beasts. A couple of the biggest dinosaurs pulled at the reedy vegetation on the shore, reinforcing my belief these were herbivores. I got one of them in my IQ, and the system was able to recognize it instantly. The computer displayed identification, dinosaur, Parasaurolophus walkeri, female. Parasaur has a nice ring to it, I said while admiring the beast spread across the shore in front of us. But I had to search for one that wasn't a part of the main group. I tried to use Sheila's technique for picking out the leader male and his females, but they all looked identical. I finally did see a loner tugging at leaves from a fluffy little tree across the clearing from us.
Over there. What's it doing?
I pointed to the parasaurus that was separated from the others. Rather than play at the shore, it rubbed itself on a tree 30 yards away from the others.
It is smaller than the rest of them, she answered. It may not be mature.
It was hard to get a clear perspective when all the animals were gigantic. The main group of them were maybe twice my height and about 30 feet long from nose to tail. The smaller one was maybe half the height of the others and not nearly as long, and it was still about as bulky as a draft horse.
That's the one. I can feel it. We'll sneak over there, and then I'll get even closer and look into its eyes.
I gathered my spear, but Sheila grabbed my arm before I could stand.
Here. The neck rope should now be the size needed to loop over its head.
The feline warrior tossed the rope to me. I should warn you, my skills with horse-like creatures are pretty rusty. I rode a couple of times from my animal husbandry classes in community college. Oh, and I guess I'd also count that one day-long horseback adventure with a date from hell. I couldn't even remember the name of the girl, but I did remember having a sore ass for days.
You have the advantage, Victor.
My planet is no such beasts of burden.
I let that sink in as we snuck through the undergrowth at the edge of the floodplain with my healthy-looking companion. Sheila looked like a sexy workout trainer, which made sense if her planet had no modern technology or beasts of burden to carry them around. I'd be a buff-ass mofo, too, if I jogged all over Los Angeles instead of taking my car. As we moved, I realized my health was getting better. Probably the only benefit to being on this world. We stayed on the edge of the clearing and used small bushes as cover until we were about 20 feet from the parasaur. The dino never looked at us, so I thought we did a good job sneaking up on it. Sheila held my spear as I got ready to cross the final few yards by myself.
"Wish me luck,"
I whispered as my heart began to pound into my ribs like cops kicking down a door. I had absolutely no idea how to tame a dinosaur as big as the one in front of me. Should I approach it from behind so I could sneak in close? Do I move in from the side? Would it be best to get its attention right away so I avoid scaring it? I didn't even know how close I had to be for my tame skill to work. It remained standing while it chomped away at the leafy growth all around us. I decided the safest course of action was to let it know I was there. While walking to where it could see me, I did a quick IQ check and learned this one was another female.
"Hey, girl. I'm a friend,"
I stuttered. Could this dinosaur smell fear? If so, I'd just given myself away. After taking a deep breath, I tried to wall off all my fright. Being this close to a wild animal was borderline insane, even back on Earth. It took a moment for the dinosaur to notice me. Though she continued to crunch at the leaves hanging from the side of her mouth, she adjusted her crested head to look me over.
"You got something on your chin,"
I said to lighten the mood. I'd gotten close enough to see boxy imprints of her teeth in the half-chewed, slimy, green leaves in her mouth. Her left eye squinted as if making sure I was real. The ring of yellow around the black pupil made the eye appear friendly and inviting, but I didn't let that fool me. Though I had no reason to think she would do it, her mouth was big enough to bite off my head. I opened my hands and held them in front of me with the palms out, just like I'd do when meeting a new dog. I hoped the action translated to dinos. "I would never harm you. I'm here to make you an offer to come back to our camp and do a little work for us. There are four in our group. Actually, we have five if you count Jinx. You two would have lots in common." With many animals, it wasn't what you said, but how you said it. And with this one, I tried to remain friendly and casual. The parasaur continued to imitate a cow chewing on grass. I had no idea of the mechanics of tame. I looked into the eye facing me and mentally suggested she accept my offer. It seemed ham-handed, but with animals, simple was always better.
"Will you let me put this loop on you?"
I asked in a soft voice. She kept on chewing, with the suggestion of a bored look on her face. I already had the IQ open, so I tried to use the tame ability, if that's how it operated. I didn't have to do anything to tame Jinx, but he was 100 times smaller and maybe he required less of my concentration. "I want to tame this dinosaur," I said as if executing a command to the computer. The parasaur blew a few pleasant notes through its crest.
"Is that a yes?"
I said happily. I tested the connection again by mentally suggesting she should drop her head. For 10 seconds she seemed to mock me by continuing to chew, but then she did lower it.
"Holy shit,"
I said with barely contained excitement.
"Can you lie down so we can ride on your back?"
I asked. I kept my tone friendly like it was the easiest thing in the world. She knelt down and then sprawled out in the undergrowth of ferns. I marveled at the details of her head and neck and ran my fingers over the bumpy scales on her side. Her skin was mostly gray up top and on the sides, but it became a light brown underneath. Pieces of dried mud were wedged in various crevices under there. She wasn't the flashiest dino, but at that moment she was the prettiest I'd ever seen.
"It worked!"
I said loud enough for Sheila to hear. I also waved her to come closer to me.
"I'm going to toss this over your head, but it isn't going to hurt. I promise."
I started by looping the rope over the long crest. Then I let it fall over her eyes and around her snout. I'd begun to think this was going to work. The IQ began to flash, and I eagerly read the Parasaurolophus tamed notice.
"Fucking A!"
I said triumphantly. My loud voice made the parasaur flinch, but I held my hand on her neck, and that seemed to steady her.
"She's tamed?" the catwoman asked.
"I don't know if she'll do any tricks for me, but my IQ has put her into my tamed inventory," I said. "It did the same for Jinx. All we do now is see if she'll let us walk her." We brought the rope on the assumption we'd use it to drag the tamed dino back home, but standing there in front of her, I knew that was thinking small. If we were ever going to maximize the potential of this parasaur, I had to think big,